Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Welcome to Alive to Thrive. It's Friday, and your guest today, your host today, sorry, is Brenda Fraser. We've had so much snow here in the Midwest. My brain is foggy, and it's just so much bad weather. I can't even believe it, but we're bringing you a little bit of sunshine today with our guest, Jerry Levesque. She's worked in education, literacy, grant writing, and program evaluation, and she was an associate professor at Webster University School of Education and has her own little business called the Center of Effort. I love that name. That's a really cool business name. And she evaluates school and statewide projects funded through grants by the federal and state government. And she's, you know, earned a certification from the Women's Business Enterprise National Center. And she's written a couple of different books. One of her passions is Living by the Ocean, and she wrote a narrative memoir called Tidal Times, and a couple of books on family literacy. But we're also going to be talking with her today about the Zen of Weight Loss, which I had featured on one of my programs in the last couple of months. Fitness trainer Karen Sullivan of St. Charles, Missouri, collaborated with Jerry on the Zen of Weight Loss. So, Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you very much, Brenda.
Hey, how you doing?
Outstanding. Staring out at a big woods covered with snow. So I understand what you're saying. It's been cold outside.
Yes, and it must be hard for you with being such an avid sailor and loving the ocean. Why did you decide to sort of stay in the Midwest when you could be out sailing the seas?
Well, I get my time in the seas during the summertime in Rhode Island, and that kind of fixes me up. And then we've got the beautiful Mississippi River to sail on, and I've got children and grandchildren here and have been dug in kind of like the Big Chill for the last 30-some-odd years.
Well, that's really awesome. And you sound like you live life full out and exciting, and that's one of the things we like to talk about on Alive to Thrive, or featuring people that really seize life and enjoy it to the fullest. And we want to talk a little bit about your journey with fitness and wellness and meditation. So how did you first meet your trainer, Karen Sullivan?
I met her at the Main Street Gym in St. Charles, Missouri. And I'm an avid writer, but Brenda, that keeps your butt in the chair and not your legs moving outside. So
right.
I really needed someone who I could connect with, who would keep me interested and not get bored on just treadmills, and that was Karen. And then I found Karen was in the middle of writing a book, and that made it even more interesting. And so she offered me the opportunity to take a look and maybe edit her book, and that kind of evolved over time to a lot more writing, and she invited me to be her co-editor. So we spent the better part of a year writing, rewriting, and going through the publishing process together.
Well, I think that's awesome, and I think it's awesome that you teamed up, because collaboration is one of the keys to success, and none of us can get there on our own as a solo operator. And, you know, using your best strengths as a writer and some of the skills you developed over the years with publishing other books and editing, and certainly your background in education, I'm sure was the perfect fit for her, you know, technical skills and her technical knowledge about fitness and personal training. And I know she has spoken very highly of you, so it's a neat collaboration.
Oh, it's outstanding, and it's been a lot of fun, and it keeps me fit, and it really is so much fun to join with another woman to make something out of ideas that, you know, now we can hold, you know, a case of copies in our hands and say, wow, this is real.
Yeah, we did this. So what's your advice for other women thinking of collaborating? There's so many people that want to write a book, and they never get off of, you know, more than the idea or the concept, or maybe they jot down some notes and, you know, they need to sort of stay accountable to someone. You know, what are your tips on finding a collaborator?
Wow, you've got to put yourself out there first. You know, there's a Paul Simon song that said, if you want to be a writer, pick up a pen. Well, most of us head to the keyboard now. But if you want to be a writer, you've got to find someone who is willing to listen, someone who's willing to read. And that means you have to cross a bridge and find out what some other people would be willing to read and willing to listen. And so that's really finding the right collaborator who will listen. And that means you start early dialogues and you find common ground, but you find different ways to approach the same topic. And I think that's where the excitement starts generating and our social connections start thriving.
Oh, that's so cool. So what did you do when you had differences of opinion on how something should be described? I mean, was it all, you know, roses, or did you have a conflict that you had to resolve?
Often our conflicts were over how research was being depicted in the book, and we did a delicate balance between not pulp fiction but pop news, and really how you explain things from a pop perspective so that people can understand them, but at the same time, you know, you can back them up. So we always resolved our issues by doing a little bit more digging and coming back to the other person with, there's a different way we can look at it, or we can leave it out. And we really worked through just about everything that, well, we did, everything on every page we agreed upon.
Wow. And what I like about the book, The Zen of Weight Loss, A Mindful, Livable Approach to Fitness, first of all, it has a very attractive cover of a sand dune, so that's inviting. But
that's
it's a
Karen's
nice,
work.
Yeah, Karen took that picture in Delaware, which is phenomenal. I've been to that state park, Henlopen State Park. But I like the format that it's paperback, it's spiral bound, it's easy to carry with you. So if you're traveling, or if you want to just take it to a park, or, you know, go outside and read a little bit of it. It's a very usable, it's like a workbook, as opposed to, you know, some book that's just going to stay on your shelf and not ever get used. It's a book meant to be very personal and very much usable on a daily basis, would you say?
Absolutely. You can dog-ear it all you want. It fits in most women's purse or fillets that they're carrying with them. It's definitely a carry-on airport-friendly kind of a book as opposed to a giant tome. And we wanted it to be fun. We didn't want to be pedantic and tell you, here's everything you do wrong. And we didn't want to make promises that would make you feel an outsider was controlling your life. We wanted a book that you could hold, write in it all you want, and in the end, it was a self-realization of who you are. And that's who you want to be.
Well, and we'll talk a little bit more about the contents of the book, and there's some great worksheets, and one of the biggest points that the book makes and Karen makes when she's coaching her clients is journaling, and it gives you tips on how to do your journaling and your measurements, and we'll talk about that. But let's talk about publishing and self-publishing. There's a lot of people out there that want to get into self-publishing, and you've been blessed to have a spouse that's been in the publishing field for 40 years. How did you get started with, you know, publishing before this book with some other books you've done?
Wait, that's a good question, and we have been a publishing family for over 40 years, and my husband George has been involved in every aspect of it, from editors to sales. So he coached a lot of the process that I just want to share briefly with you, is that nobody writes a book that gets published that nobody's ever written before. And so if you start out and say, no one's ever said this, then you're not going to go very far. You need to do some research, and you need to go to a bookstore, as Karen and I did, and you need to see who else has done something close to what I'm trying to do. What did you like about it? What didn't you like about it? You start to pick up style differences. You start to see this fits with what I'm trying to envision that I can do, but mine's going to be different, and you need to write down how you're different, how you're alike. And that's going to frame some territory for you as you go about writing your book. You got a collaborator now, someone who's willing to listen, someone who's going to read your drafts, and I want to make one thing clear. I must have taken down a very, very large tree in the process of printing drafts and reading drafts and rejecting drafts. Writing is long, hard work. It's a lot of passion, but it's a lot of technical skill too. If you have someone who can help you with the edits, because when you get into flow, when you're so at one with your ideas that you're writing, it's hard to catch the commas, the typos. It's a challenge. So you get back to the point where now you know I've got my niche, I've got my idea, I've got my sense of how many pages it should be, and you finish a manuscript. The next thing you need to do is, if you're going to self-publish, you have to go through the process of getting it laid out. Nobody publishes a book, or no editor is going to read a book written in Microsoft Word. It's just not done. And getting into word processing programs like Insight, they're expensive, they're complicated, and there are professionals who, that's their thing. They get words into a way that look like you see them in print. Another thing that comes along is, if you're going to look for a publisher outside of your own resources, or you don't have a small company that can launch the work, then you need to go through a process of finding a book and then going through all of the research involved in preparing a book for review by a manuscript editor. This is complicated. I did this with a previous book I published, and it is a couple of days' work of just describing your work, giving samples, giving outlines, giving the theme, the setting, the plot, all of these details, so that you look at your book from a clinical perspective. What is it that you have here? And then you start, if you take the route of looking for a editor and publisher, you follow that route and you start submitting manuscript proposals for review. And you start looking in your mail, like Dr. Seuss did 23 times, and you look for, this isn't quite what we wanted. And the other way, the way that we took, is you go through the design phase, you look that you're going to get started with a small niche, and you opt to form your own publishing house, set up your own tax ID, set up all of the things that go involved with getting the book printed, getting cases of books in your house that you can't keep in the basement because I can't get damp. And then you go through part two, which is as big and as complicated as part one. You have to promote the book. You have to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of work,
and that's,
Brenda.
That's where I come in with a lot of my clients, is helping them on the promotion side and the book tour and certainly getting noticed through social media. And so many people think they can just write a book, have it published, and then it's done. And there's so much to be done in advance, as you said, of the actual manuscript getting published. Lisa Nichols, who's written several books and was mentored by Jack Canfield and was in the movie The Secret, she talked about going to churches all over the country and any speaking engagement she could get. She was in an anthology with several other authors, and because she hustled and sold more copies of that book than any of the other authors in this anthology, she got $1 million advance on her book, No Matter What, which is her most recent book. But she worked hard for that, and she really talks about the things you need to do. She has a 3-day workshop seminar called How to Speak and Write to Make Millions. It's every May in San Diego, and I got to go to it last May. It's fantastic for anyone out there thinking about being a published author or speaker. Check out Lisa Nichols' website, motivatingthemasses.com, for more information. But I like that you have really pointed out a lot of these steps, Jerry, and I know that's what you brought to the table when you and Karen were collaborating, because it could have taken her years to get a finished manuscript and then get it all the way through the design process, the editing process, the self-publishing, and all of that. And so I commend the two of you for working so well together, and I just think it's a great lesson for other women, other men and women, to model a book project after, because it was a very, you did that in, 2 years, or start to finish? How long did it take you to get
I think it was close to 2 years, Brenda. Yeah. Yep. Good.
So close to 2 years. And people have to be willing to stick it out for the long haul and be committed to each other and be completely honest and have accountability. And how did you do, did you have any tracking systems or goals for how many pages you wanted to write per week, or how did you set some kind of timeline to the project?
I am a person who, because I'm self-employed, my business is with schools, and I have up and down busy times. But I got dug into Karen's work and really got into the state of flow. I forgot about time. I was so involved in the research for the sake of the research, the writing for the writing, that often I would put in 12, 15-hour days. And, you know, come staggering into the gym with Karen, so proud that I could show her, you know, a whole chapter, 3, 4, 5 pages. We didn't really set timelines because I think we were very mindful, if I can use the term. It was something we were doing at the moment. We were both working to the best of our abilities. And time was right now. It was, what are we doing? How does it look right now? And we didn't have a deadline to meet other than it would be done when it was right. And that's how we proceeded. Mm. I've written other things that have had rigorous timelines. And I have to say, struggling with a clock is difficult. And so this, between Karen and I, was almost having a Jimmy Buffett watch on. It said now, and we just breathed in, breathed out, and we moved on as we could.
Well, that's a good transition statement about breathing, because the focus, a big focus of your book is mindfulness and a Zen approach. And so, you know, let's talk a little bit about a Zen practice. What, how did you get introduced to meditation?
Truly, I got introduced to meditation through Karen. You know, we could go back to being a flower child in a biology class in 69 and having someone draw bubbles on the blackboard and said, this is meditation. I didn't quite get it then. I read Hermann Hesse's Siddhartha. You know, I knew the life of Buddha. But it was really sitting and going to one of Karen's classes and sitting down and having her introduce me to meditating and then practicing meditation, doing a number of different websites that Karen had recommended, and all of a sudden coming to the sense that, wow, this is awesome. This is just truly a change in the way I relate with my mind.
I love that because I've been following these principles for almost 10 years now, and I was one that never meditated. I was a go-go-go type person, and I used to think, how do you just sit there and clear your head? And, you know, I had to learn to do it in a small group of women, actually, by listening to sounds of the ocean. And we would do 10-minute segments, and we'd listen to the sounds of the ocean. And, you know, initially the first few weeks I was thinking about, you know, did I get my laundry done? Do I have money in my parking meter? When am I next eating? You know, and all these things that our busy mind can focus on and bounce around and give us monkey mind. What were some of the things that you used to start taming and calming your mind? Did you use sounds of nature, or did you get outside in nature? How did you start?
I started staring out my window, which is a beautiful hill here in Missouri, and changes with the scenery, you know, daily. Well, you know, right now I've got a cardinal out the window and pure white snow and trees, and I found that I could really just see through that. And during this time, I realized that, you know, I'm an avid sailor. I do my thriving on water. And I began to understand that there's a different me who can sit on a dock for hours and just listen to the tide. And I realized that they weren't hours. They were sometimes just 5 or 10 minutes. But I had been meditating, but I never knew that I was meditating. I was truly engaged in letting the thinking go and just the senses that would come in be. So part of learning the meditation when Karen introduced it more formally was to be able to, you know, monkey mind a little bit back to when it had been just the sense of the sea, the surf, the ripple of the water going around a kayak. That oneness with myself and nature, that was meditation. And so I just proceeded and then practiced it more often when it might be just stopping. Last night, it was a beautiful evening. The snow was at dusk, and it was all turning that beautiful shade of blue, and I was getting the mail. And I just took the extra moments to breathe in, breathe out, and just absorb that beautiful moment of being.
I love that. That is such a good way to describe it, and so accurately that no matter what the weather, you can find that beauty that, like you said, the blue snow and the shadows on the snow when the sun is high, or the moon. We've had some beautiful moons on these clear, crisp nights. And so,
can I just interrupt you on that one?
Yes,
as
please.
A college professor, mm-hmm. I have the exit course in research, and the standard exercise for the 3 months that the course took place was that my students were to observe the moon no less than 3 nights a week in journal about just getting out and observing the moon. And it's an exercise that comes from Eleanor Duckworth at Harvard, Graduate School of Education. And what it always happened with the students is that they started with very clinical observations of the moon, and by the end of the semester had the most beautiful writings about themselves as observers of the moon and how those observations changed their sense of who they were and eventually changed who they were.
And isn't that true for journaling in general? You can start out being maybe journaling about your food and being very factual and this is what I ate, and then you start getting into this is what I ate and how I felt, and then this is how I felt and what it triggers, and this is what it reminds me of a time when I would escape through food. So journaling This, you know, let's talk a little bit about the importance of journaling, and that's a great exercise. I love that. Observe the moon 3 times a week and journal about it, because that can be get you in the habit of just the writing and the reflecting and the thinking and slowing your mind down. But let's talk about journaling food. Was that hard for you to start doing that?
Yeah, it's tricky. My husband is a master at it. He has done Weight Watchers. He's, you know, he's an avid walker who has an entire case of journals that he keeps track of his walking and his weight for the last 40 years. Where for me, starting to keep those logs, Karen gave me a little notebook and said, go for it. It was tricky, but I found two things. One, I have very distinct eating patterns, and two, I'm pretty adventurous with food, and I enjoy food. And to me, preparing food, cooking, is a passionate experience. And actually cooking complex, very interesting meals. These I call slow food. My grandma called it making something from nothing. But what it did in my awareness of the food, I took pictures of my meals, is I understood this is how I control my weight. Half of it is preparing it. The other half is eating it and enjoying it. And I don't eat as much because I enjoy food so much that preparing it from the grocery store to setting it on the table and taking that picture of it's done, to me, that's half the satiation. And it's how I control my weight.
That's so interesting because I've learned that, too, through a program called Faveo. And I've started taking pictures only recently. It was interesting because I took a picture, I don't know if it was Christmas or New Year's, and got a lot of comments from people. And it was just a healthy meal that I had enjoyed making. Like you said, it's very a passionate process to shop for foods and cook with foods that are colorful and using a lot more vegetables and having a variety of color on your plate. And it slows down the process so you're actually, you can see and taste the food you're eating instead of just whatever, just filling that empty void inside, that stuffing that hole, that endless hole that we stuff with food or chemicals or whatever we stuff it with. But have you had issues with your weight and with diet in the past?
I'm kind of embarrassed, but I weigh the same that I did pretty much after college, and I only have one size. So I've stuck with it. I would be honest and say I've got genes that, well, not just the genes I can fit into, but, you know, the DNA that helped me out along because I've just had a set point that I've kind of kept to and lived with, and it works. So, yeah.
Well, you're one of those lucky people, but you're probably very active. And have you had any health issues that you've had dealt with over the years changing the way you eat has helped? Or, you know, for example, I have asthma, and I know that if I eat foods that increase inflammation, that's going to trigger my asthma. But if I eat foods that lower inflammation, like pineapple, that will keep my asthma at bay.
That's a good point. We should have a common sharing on that one. Yeah, I have asthma too, and it's something that I realize that I have to keep healthy. And while I can, you know, just kind of toss out that, you know, I've kept the same size, you got to keep remembering I am someone who keeps track of it, keeps track of what I'm eating. I keep track of how much I'm moving around, and I'm very sensitive to when it gets out of whack. And paying attention to food and to paying attention to how my gut receives it, how my chest receives it, because they're both really, really connected. So if my digestive system goes out of whack, I have to really get right on it and monitor what I've eaten, make sure that I don't, you know, keep into that kind of food or whatever it's been, because that can trigger asthma. So I pay attention, and I think that's a key point of the Zenna weight loss is paying attention. what's your body telling you? I think most of our bodies tell us and scream loud and clear that, oh, my gosh, this doesn't agree with me. But we think, we'll just tough on through. And that just isn't smart. That's just not a smart mind-body relationship. So I'm kind of with you. I've got to pick the foods, and I've got to avoid other things that I know are triggers.
Well, and so many people don't realize the correlation between nutrition and good health and, you know, for example, if they have a lot of bloat or gas or, you know, that they're eating foods that are, you know, creating all these terrible digestive systems. But one of the things I do want to talk about, because I know you've mentioned to me offline that you have dealt with breast cancer, and you know, talk about a wake-up call. What was that like, and what were you doing in forms of treating that with good nutrition and fitness?
Wow, earning a pink ribbon is a very difficult thing. And in my case, the number one lesson is stress is your enemy. So my friends would jump up and down and say, well, Jerry, when you don't eat, you gain weight, which is true. When I don't eat, I gain weight. I gain it very, you know, quickly, and have to literally tell myself I'm stressed out, I'm not eating right, I'm skipping meals, and that little scale is kind of kicking up a couple of pounds. When that happens, I eat. My friend Deb always says, you're the only person I know that can sit down and eat three meals every day and lose weight. And and that's important. I've got to have the balance. My my husband's a real trooper to remind me in the morning, Jerry, breakfast, okay? Real people eat breakfast. And these things were hard for me with breast cancer because you really have to look at that set point, which coming out of a very, very complicated year of surgery, my eating habits had been destroyed. I had been, you know, just knocked down. And I was 50 years old, and, you know, my fear was, would I paddle a kayak and hoist a sail? Well, another part of it was, would I have the energy to dance at my grandchildren's weddings? You know, I had to look at fitness and nutrition as really the only way that I was going to have any grasp and control over my future. So it was tough, a lot of tough choices.
Well, congratulations to you for dealing with that. And, you know, that's another aspect of why I wanted you to be on the show, because Alive to Thrive is about, you know, keeping moving forward no matter whether it's a health challenge, a financial challenge, or whatever the setback is in life that all of us face at one time or another, is how do you keep moving forward in the face of obstacles and keep your wits about yourself and keep your joy and, as you say, zest for a wonder-filled life. We're going to come back after a short break, and we're going to talk about your blog that you're developing called Zest for a Wonder-Filled Life. I love that, using the ZWL brand as you developed from the book title. So stay with us, Jerry, and listeners. We'll be right back. You're listening to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, your host today and every Friday at 12 noon Central. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A comprehensive guide of rocks, crystals, and stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You might know me, I'm 50 Cent. You may follow my tweets, my Facebook friends. Odds are a few in 6 degrees separate us. We're that close. What's crazy is 1 in 6 don't know where their next meal is coming from. These are your coworkers, your neighbors, your friends. Hunger's too close for us to ignore. So visit feedingamerica.org/hunger and find your local food bank to see how you can make a difference. From one close friend to another, let's do this. I'm 50 Cent, and together we are Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM News. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Frazier, and our guest today is Jerry Levesque, who helped write The Zen of Weight Loss and is working on a blog called Zest for a Wonder-Filled Life. Tell us about that, Jerry.
Thank you, Brenda. Karen and I have, really taken the ZWL as much broader than just weight loss. And we see it as something that is about a zeal for life, and mine is a zest for life. I keep a blog now that's just jalsales.com, and in that blog I connect things that don't seem to be connected, kind of the opposite of Seinfeld that's about nothing. I write about things that are something and how they're connected, and I have fun with it, and I connect it to the sea. Well, this idea of fun and zest for a wonder-filled life comes from the work Karen and I are doing and my own zest for life. I find life to be filled with wonder. There are so many things we don't understand that are right in front of us, as simple as why does the moon shine, to getting kind of just into the fun of life. We get so bogged down as adults with our work, with our responsibilities, that in the zest for a wonder-filled life, I want people to sense play is really a good thing. It is its own reward, but it's a reward from a life of work, a life that took on responsibility and honored it. And play is a way to liberate our sense of creativity, to keep that inner child nurtured, and to keep us thriving through, as a baby boomer, for the next couple of decades. That we continue to get up inspired, motivated, with a sense that today things are possible, and I'm glad for it. I am so glad I have the opportunity to be here today, and I'm grateful that there are other people who want to be here with me. And that's what
I'm
going to write about.
I love that, and I love that waking up inspired, and just the being part of that baby boomer generation. I'm sort of at the tail end in 1960 being part of the baby boomer generation that, remembers the 60s and we were woken up to all kinds of topics. But, I think that your book is aimed not only at that audience, but it can apply to so many people on so many levels and ages to remember to live in the moment and to, as you say, to connect with nature and to connect with what's going on, internally, and that it's an internal job as well. Is your blog now live? Can people find it?
It will be going up within the week. Right now, I believe I'm going to be connecting it to jalsales.com. I'll also be able to put it up on our Facebook website and have a link to there until people connect with it. And our Facebook webpage is The Zen of Weight Loss. And we'll connect through there until we get it up and running.
Oh, good. So I do want to make sure people do know that you can stay in touch with Jerry and her writing on JALSAILS.com. And she's got some great postings there and archives and pictures of her boat and everything. So go on there, you know, start following her and reading her stuff. You're an excellent writer. I just found your blog, and I'm going to start following that. And, of course, Facebook is wonderful and all the social media to stay in touch with each other. So this being January, people are making New Year's resolutions and trying to be recommitted to their personal fitness goals. What are some tips to getting started? I mean, it might seem overwhelming for people, or they might do it for a week or two, and then by the end of the month, their resolutions are out the window. So what are some ways to get started and also to stay committed?
Well, I'm a big believer, Brenda, that success is self-determined. You've got to be proactive. You've got to be engaged. You can't get fit or really achieve wellness if you're going to be passive and alienated from yourself and other people. So to do this, you got to get out. You got to get outside, and if it's too cold outside, perhaps, you know, go to a gym. But if you're going to go to a gym, don't think of it as a couple weeks here and I am going to be toned. You need to think of it as, this is a place I can go to really do honor with my body, that I can go here and I can just get into the flow of feeling my body become stronger, that I'll be able to jump higher maybe. I can reach further. And I think it's that sense of reaching further with your body and your mind that is part of this January, quote, I'm going to get in shape. It's getting your mind in shape, it's getting your body in shape, and it's keeping those two together for the long run. So as I said, you know, get a buddy. Get somebody that you can go and walk with. Some of the most difficult, challenging times of my life, I got through with another friend to go for a walk with. And getting out for a walk, we found we were two bereaved parents. We couldn't cry and sigh and keep up a pace at the same time. So what we were able to do together was to deal with grief and sadness and use walking as a way to move forward, to breathe in, breathe out, move on. Going, you know, and these are the things, you know, go someplace to the mall and walk, or outside because you like it brisk, or you're in Florida and you can walk on a beach. Start slow, stay steady, and stay committed. And that means knowing what you're enjoying, and yet understanding that to really enjoy this, people like comfort stress. We all get off on a little bit of discomfort in our heads. It's the sense that things aren't quite right. When we're in equilibrium, man, we are just zoning. We become static and passive. Everything's okay. You want to really become aware of your disequilibrium. Hey, you know, I'm not quite getting up the stairs as fast as I used to. Or, geez, I just feel flat. I just don't feel a zest. Those are the cues that you pick up on and say, it's January, I've got all year, I've got all winter, I've got all spring, but I'm going to get out and do something for myself. And that, I think, is where you begin. And it's a couple of steps at a time, but it's that you're taking the steps, keeping track of your steps. We can't leave breadcrumbs all over the place. So be Hansel and Gretel, leave stones. Let it be the cold mark on a page or the typeface on your computer that says, I was here and here's how it felt.
And I like that, you know, to get a buddy, start out walking, you know, park a little bit further away from the store, walk as much as you can, be steady, stay committed, set yourself a couple of achievable goals. Instead of saying, I'm going to work out for 2 hours or an hour and a half every day for 7 days, say, you know what, I'm going to work out for three times this week and maybe a half hour, and then the next week, increase it to 40 minutes and just do some gradual increasing. I have noticed that when I work out with music or with even plugged into a television at like a gym where you can plug in your headphones, the time goes by much faster than if I'm just there in silence. I have workout equipment in my home. I'm not using it, but if I can go out to a gym, then I'm more motivated. And that's my personality. There are other people that are, they're just the opposite, that they would rather work out in the quiet of their own home as opposed to being out in a gym with other people. So whatever is your personality, get going. And whether you can get a buddy right away or not, you can get a buddy on the phone. And so you can be accountable to someone, you know, every other day. Say, hey, what are you doing today? What's new and different? I have an accountability buddy in Lake Ozark, and we Skype together, and we'll compare recipes of doing something new and different that's healthy. And you know, what are you new equipment have you discovered, or doing something new with a stretch band or a trampoline, but just to share some resources. And I think it's about the having that support system around you is so important. So if you're not going to a gym, then get an accountability buddy that you can talk to on the phone, and staying in touch with someone else, because they will motivate you to push yourself a little bit further. So talk about the exact program. The Zen of Weight Loss is a fitness program. It's a book. And it's a mindset, really. Starting like with the mindset, you know, where does the mind come in terms of making change and, you know, visualizing the change?
Well, you know, our brains are really wired for experience. Our brains are set up to keep track and monitor everything that happens in our bodies. Getting us to listen to our brains and to actually think about fitness, nutrition, wellness, bringing those into the forefront of your consciousness, that becomes an important part of the Zen of Weight Loss. You know, some people, you know, Descartes used to say, I think, therefore I am. Well, I kind of add it to, you know, I also feel emotionally, and therefore I be. And one of the things we talk about in the Zen of Weight Loss is to address your feelings. You know, how do you feel about yourself, your weight, your health at the time? And where do these feelings and what you know about health and nutrition and wellness, where do they cross paths and they're together and in sync? And where do they just not even know each other or on the planet? So the first part of the Zen of Weight Loss is to start thinking and to start analyzing your feelings. And these emotions, Brenda, are so cool to deal with because, you know, if I asked you, you know, okay, where do you think? Where on your body? Where would you point? Most people are just like the scarecrow. I point to my head. Where do you feel? And they point like the Tin Man, my chest, my heart. But what we know is your emotions, how you feel, these are part of your nervous system. They're wired all the way through you. So a big part of the Zen of Weight Loss is when you exercise, when you actually get that body in motion, you're truly massaging, exercising, and bringing pleasure to your emotional mindset. And these emotions carry all the way through you, right down to your pinky finger. You look at it right now, it's full of nerves. Those nerves carry your emotions. And so we get excited in these feelings of excitement, this terms we use, passion. These are part of getting that body to respond more in the vision of your mind of how a body should be moving and be looking, and you start to get a different, perhaps even warmer, more respectful, and truly playful relationship with your body and your mind through your emotions.
Mm. And so there's a phrase some people have heard of, some haven't, called emotional intelligence. How is that a part of the Zen of Weight Loss?
Wow, that's a big part of the Zen of Weight Loss, because people who understand their emotions generally have a greater sense of control, and they also can discern, here are things I can control and here are things I can't. And so with emotional intelligence, we're trying to get you to understand that people's emotions are a bow wake, a wave that actually precedes you into a room. You've been around people, Brenda, when they come into the room, you can kind of twitch that they're there, and it's like, oh, Debbie Downer, this is going to be tough. People in the Zen of Weight Loss start to realize through emotional, by building on emotional intelligence, by understanding that, yeah, there are things I can control, there are things I can't control right now, I can't invest all of my worry and anxiety in those things. But the things that I can control, sometimes I need to control in a way that is more pleasant, more playful, and something I can live with, as opposed to this is killing me. So those are ways that we start to, you know, kind of clock. How do you feel? Feel meaning. What's your emotion? Anger. Are you happy? And if you're happy, can you trace it to what you've eaten? Or a workout that you just finished, but it all comes down to you have to realize that your feelings connect your brain and your body. So deal with them.
Instead of stuffing them or ignoring them, because they just come back bigger and uglier later. If you have feelings of anger, and you continue to stuff the anger, and then you try to cover that up with food, it's just going to explode later. So do you have any personal mantras that you tell yourself when things are getting tense or stressful? Or what's some of your affirmations that you use on a daily basis?
Well, first off, my mother always told me, this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
I love
that
it.
Sense that I have to be in this moment, but this isn't going to last forever. Another one is, every day, something will click, and I will look at the sky, and I will just say, thank you, Mom, thank you, Pop, thank you, Grandma, thank you, Grandpa. And I will go on a kind of just thanking the people, my children, my husband, my dog, that things in my life are gifts, and I'm extraordinarily grateful for them. And these simple, you know, thank yous and affirmations of, I am so lucky to be here. This is great. My father always said, don't worry about things you can't control. And that has been such an anchor for me my whole life, to take the moment and to really discern, do I have any power here or not? To understand that if I'm getting emotional, am I responding? Am I reacting? And if I'm just reacting, I need to take a deep breath. I need to breathe out the anger and be still for a moment. And my mother's right. That moment passed, and now I'm the person a moment or two later that can deal. And dealing in a playful manner, dealing in a serious manner, it all keeps coming back to just be thankful that you have the opportunity to respond at all, that you're here.
I love that living with that attitude of gratitude. And the more you can be in gratitude, the less stress you have. And so, you know, when things are getting to you and irritating you and annoying you, you're not in gratitude. So I work with folks that I really advise, you know, writing down a list of gratitude things every night, keeping it in your journal. And I like your point too, doing it throughout the day, just saying thank you when you see something beautiful, a beautiful sunset that that look of unconditional love in your pet's eyes as they greet you when you come in the door. A flower that may be blooming in a plant inside that, you know, normally blooms only in the summer, you know, whatever. We have an orchid plant getting ready to bloom, and it's been dormant for maybe 2 years. That orchid plant has not bloomed. They only bloom a really long time. And it's just looking at those little things and seeing the divine beauty in simple, everyday things that are all around you that will help keep you in a place of gratitude. Do you keep a gratitude journal, Jerry?
No, I don't. I keep it in my head, and often I think in my blog I'm pointing out things that I'm really happy for, grateful for.
And so let's just also talk a little bit about, you know, controlling, personal control of mind and body. You know, it takes a lot of discipline, and developing new habits doesn't come easy. As you said, it's not a quick fix. It's not something that you're going to just suddenly change everything. If you've had 40, 50 years of living a certain way, to develop some new habits. So talk about that. What's a good timeline to start thinking about how long it takes for a new habit to be formed?
There's a lot of research on it that says you have to do the same thing 15 times before your brain even gets a wake-up call and says that you've done it. I don't know about the 15 times, but I do know that brains are wired in a way that they grease up the connections between the gray matter the more often you repeat a behavior or a thought. So the more you do it, the easier it is for your brain to accept it, because it's got a pathway that it made just for that behavior, just for that habit. How long is it going to take to wire that brain up? Hey, it took people decades to really solidify that, the lifestyle and habits that they're now saying they'd like to break. So I'd say it's going to take some time. A resolution today that you're going to drop by Valentine's Day, that's not going to get you into the summer and the fall. So I'd say, you know, look at a little longer time plan. I tend to look every year at my circle around the sun, Brenda, and I'm going to ride this planet, and I'm going to go through the solar system and come back where I started. And that's how I tend to look at it. I've got a long journey to make. It's going to take some time, and I'm on a planet that's going to be tilted and spinning the whole ride. So I've got to be prepared to hang on and stay for the long run.
I love it. I love it. And I love that on your Facebook page there are daily tips and ways to think about making fitness stick is the one for today, and thinking about discouragement, et cetera. So people should really look for that Facebook page. It's facebook.com/ZWL method. So that's the way to find that Facebook page, facebook.com/ZWL method. So any closing thoughts? We're wrapping up here. It's ending very quickly. We only have a couple of minutes left. Any closing thoughts, Jerry?
We got the Winter Olympics coming. You've got to be fit to even be a spectator in Russia. So I just want to remind everyone of the motto of the Olympics, Citius Altius Fortius. That's Latin for swifter, higher, and stronger. That's the zen of weight loss. That's the spirit of sports for the joy of sports. I hope people spend the year stretching the limits of their physical abilities, understanding how physical activity will sharpen their minds and tone their bodies. And I hope we all reach for something with all of our resolve right here, right now. Swifter, higher, stronger. I hope we all this year, Brenda, see ourselves clearly and calmly as fit, healthy, and just about the right size, Brenda, to make it through this life. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts and my ideas about the Zen of Weight Loss with Karen Sullivan, and to be able to share it with you and your audience. It's with
thank
gratitude.
Thank you so much. Well, we encourage people to, if you're listening today, to share the link with your friends. keep reposting it. The archive will be ready very shortly here, so we can enjoy this broadcast for many weeks and months to come. And it's just packed with some great wisdom. So thank you, Jerry, and Happy New Year to you, and happy sailing.
Thank you very much. See you on the water, Brenda.
Bye-bye. See you on the water.